Welcome to the breakfast show on Faith FM with Scaffy and Lindsay. This is the best place to start your day with positive and with uplifting thoughts.
You're listening across Australia on 87.6, 87.8 or 88 depending on where you are. Or you can listen to us through our Faith FM app anywhere in the world.
And today, if you're listening live, it's Thursday, the 20th of August, 2026. I'm in the studio with Miss Lindsay. Good morning to you, Lindsay. Good to have you back.
Good to see your face, Scaffy.
Likewise. And good morning to Producer Shell. How are you, Producer Shell?
I'm good. I'm not so confident Lindsay meant what she said.
No, I was just saying it.
Oh, I think she's totally meant it. I think she's absolutely
Scaffy,
ecstatic that
I've been
here.
Scaffy for like a month now. I've been so sad without him here. So happy that he's back.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
Is this your first?
This is my first time with him back.
Really?
Since a lot for a long time.
Yeah, because
right?
I was sick last week.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
there you go. Yeah, it's good to have a familiar face.
I thought
face.
You were in on Monday.
Yeah, but he wasn't.
Oh, you still weren't here on Monday.
Yes,
that's right. You
I was
didn't
in
start
kombucha.
Back until Tuesday. Mm-hmm. That's yeah. right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's been a long time.
That's right.
Very good. I missed you too.
Oh. My gratitude for this morning is that Scaffy's back.
Oh, thank you very much. Look, I don't have such a selfless gratitude. You know, I'm very grateful that you're here as well. But I have another gratitude as well.
Okay, go for it.
I'm grateful for honest people today.
Like me.
Yes. Yes, like you and Producer Shea and our listeners. Yesterday, look, I did something that normally is not really advisable, but I did it anyway. Oh. I left my car with my wife.
Oh.
And
not always advisable. Yeah. What's that?
I'll tell you why.
That makes it sound really bad.
Yeah. She parked my – she's a great driver, by the way. But she parked my car under a very special tree, probably home to a whole family and extended family and relatives of kookaburras.
Oh.
So they left their mark in my bonnet, you know, and there was a considerable amount of bird droppings.
Yep,
it was almost like my car went through a paintball course, but except that the paint was only white. So I said, okay, I have to do something about it because this thing is driving me nuts. So I took my car to my local car wash.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're going to fix me up.
No.
And when the blokes that were working there saw it, they said, hey, you know, boss, would you like us to scrub it out of your car first before you go through the automatic car wash? And I said, yeah, sure, go for it. I was on the phone. I was not paying too much attention, but I said, gave them a thumbs up. And, you know, they cleaned it up. I was very grateful, cleaned my car, came back up, you know. But then when I left my car a few moments later, I realized that my bonnet was all scratched up.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. It was all scratched. It was looking absolutely horrible. It was like two different colors. It's just like, man, it's just like absolutely ruined.
Oof.
So I said, how do I do? Do I just, you know, forgive and let go and just, you know. But I said, I'm going to go back. Even if the guys, you know, won't admit that they've done it. I said, hey, look, guys, just watch out because this can damage other cars' paint. So at least you don't do this again. So I went there. But you know what? The guys were absolutely – they owned it. They said, look, we're sorry. Look, we're going to pay for it. We're going to, you know, pay for someone to go up and polish it. Here we go. Like, no. They're not trying to defend themselves. No. Just like, sorry. Yeah, we made a mistake. We're fixing it for you. So I was just very grateful for that attitude. You know?
Yeah, it's getting rarer nowadays.
It's getting rarer, isn't it? So I'm very grateful for these guys. And yeah, well done to you.
I wonder if your approach to them of being like, hey, look, I'm not really going to, you know, tell you guys off, just letting you know that this can affect
people. Yeah.
Probably put them not in the not defensive.
Have, yeah, that's right. Yeah, did not come fuming or anything.
But unless you ask for them to pay for it, they're not going to. They're not going to offer it.
Yeah. So, but they, in this case, they offered. So I'm very grateful.
Good.
Yeah, it's good to see honest people.
We were discussing it the other day. The modern paint is much weaker than it is. And so I do feel bad for them because they're just scrubbing like they would normally. But all of these new cars have really weak paint. I mean, my car is really new and it's already got like 12 chips in it.
Yeah. My car has a very thin paint. I think that they're doing this with all the modern cars. It's just like extremely thin paint. I think they're really...
planned obsolescence, so you pay for more. So it's basically a subscription. Yeah.
But not. I just embraced. Just not wear and tear.
Yeah.
You know?
It is what it is.
Yeah. Yep. What about you, Producer Shell? What are you grateful for today?
I am grateful for audiobooks helping me to sleep. You know, listening,
that was, why is that?
Listening to Steps to Christless. I don't know. I just couldn't sleep. My mind was just in a going everywhere. Wires crossing here, there, and everywhere. And I just woke up. I went to bed at 8:30, and then I woke up at midnight, and I just could not shut my brain off.
Oh no!
And so I tried for like an hour or two, and then I gave up, and I put on Steps to Christ and had that just playing next to me.
Did you read the whole book?
At least three chapters. I think, it might have been three and a half. But, and then it came to the end of the book and went into an ad for you have reached the end of the book, blah, blah, blah. And so, but still, I was really blessed to have been able to have that to help me cool my brain down.
Yeah. So were you able to go back to sleep naturally after that?
I think once my alarm went off and I'm like, no, I'm snoozing it and I'm going to try to sleep. So I slept for like 15 minutes.
I'm grateful that you're here. Grateful for these audiobooks as well. They're great. Look, you know what else is great?
What?
What we have in our pipeline today.
Ooh.
Because we're going to be talking about Esther becoming a queen in the first hour. Then we're going to be looking into the recoveries of artifacts from that big museum heist in France. I'm going to be sharing a story about transforming a God moment into a lifetime mission. So I have a really good, feel-good story. And our interview today is going to be absolutely special. We're going to have John Ashton here. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be sharing with us about his latest book, How to Eat Chocolate and Feel Good About It. You know the name of his book? The Chocolate Diet. If you'd like to learn about it, you have to listen to us today.
I'm so
7:35. And in our encounter with God, we're going to be looking into our discussion in, you know, speaking in tongues. What does the Bible talk about it? It's in 1 Corinthians 14. We're going to be going verse by verse as we do.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
It's Kathy Lindsay and producer Shell. And it is now the time for us to get a brand new, shiny, polished quiz question. Please, producer Shell.
All right. All polished up and ready to go. How many chapters are in the book of Psalms? How many chapters are in the book of Psalms? We have a correct answer already from Miss Competition herself, Lindsay. We've got two correct answers. 0491-064-669. Play along with us. Send in what you think that number is. How many chapters are in the book of Psalms?
Okay. Yeah, that's a great question. Mm. Yes. I have a bit of a project with the book of Psalms.
Do you?
Yeah. Through them and I'm marking some of the key words in my Bible and then I'm writing down for what kind of occasion that psalm is good.
Okay.
Because the way that I see the Psalms, they're almost like, medications that you have in a pharmacy.
Okay.
You know how you have like in a box, this is for, you know, headaches, this is for like stomach aches, this is for cold and flu. Psalms are like that. They're like prepackaged prayers that will help you get words to express some things that sometimes you don't have words. This is like, Psalms are kind of like the ChatGPT of the time, of the Bible.
They're not.
I'll tell that because you know sometimes like you know people go to AI like oh, I don't know how do I say this like nicely. You have an idea, but hey, how can I say that? I've used it a few times. Hey, how can I say this thing but very politely? And then it will write down to me. Okay, nice. Like it's just exactly what I want to say.
You need help asking about being polite.
Well, sometimes I do.
Man, I should try that.
Yeah, it is actually phenomenal, the work that they do. And the Psalms are like that. It's like, hey, God, how can I express this absolute anger in my chest, like, but in a very nice way?
I haven't gone to the Psalms for the angry one so far, but sometimes when something really good has happened and I really want to praise God, I go and find a psalm. And
They praise as well.
Yeah, God. I just praise God really excitedly. Now, when I was first reading through the Bible all the way through about, I don't know, like 8 years ago or something, I was like, oh man, David and all his big emotions, my goodness, like I don't like the Psalms. There's just too much crying going on. Like, so I really avoided it a lot of the time, but I sat down, I was like, I am reading through the whole Bible. I have to do this somehow. So what I would do was I would like, as I started to read the Psalm, I would get the vibe of whether it was a happy or a sad or whatever, angry kind of Psalm. And then I would make up a tune routine to go along with it, and I would like singing out, like just make up a tune, sing it out nice. Loud, or do it in my head.
That's really nice.
Yeah,
it's a great.
So that's what got me through reading the whole thing.
Yeah, I love it. That's
quite
a great
slog,
idea.
But yeah. I made it. Now I'm okay with
so
it.
So that's my little psalm project. And look, there are psalms, for example, if you're like feeling like resentful against a person, well, go to Psalm 109. I mean, it's the best place to go. Or if you're feeling really depressed that nobody cares, nobody, you know, knows what you're going through, just go and read Psalm 88.
Okay.
You know, so there's a psalm for every season in life. And I'm just cataloging all of that so that, if you know, if someone – or if you're afraid, man, go Psalm 91, Psalm 23. If you're looking at politics and you're like kind of a – you say like, man, what's going on in the world? Just go for Psalm 2. There's so many good, great psalms for that.
Okay.
And so psalms, they, you know, if you're happy, if you're joyful, say, hey, God, I just want to give you thanks that it just goes a little bit beyond. You just say, hey, thank you, Jesus. And there's so many of these psalms to express gratitude to God. If you've been in justice, I think Psalm 8 is a great one.
Mm-hmm.
So there's psalm for every season.
Awesome.
All right. So how many of these psalms there are? That's the big question. If you do know the answer, 0491-064-669. Now, we're going to get into the story of Esther.
Yes.
So Yester. We are going to start with chapter 2 and verse 17.
Did you miss my little dad joke?
No, I did. Let's say that again.
I said Esther.
Oh, yes.
You just kept talking. Shell had a little chuckle, but you just missed it.
There we go.
All right. So we're in, Esther chapter 2.
Chapter 2 and verse 17.
Verse 17. So I'll read it out, but I think I want us to back up to a couple of things as we go.
100%.
So verse 17, the king loved Esther more than all the other women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins. So he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Then the king made a great feast, the feast of Esther, for all his officials and servants, and he proclaimed a holiday in the provinces and gave gifts according to the generosity of a king.
Okay. You wanna make any comments?
Yeah.
Okay.
So obviously this is the high moment, at least of this chapter. Like, yay, she got married.
She made it.
She's a queen. They even made a holiday. I didn't realize that. Like, they made a holiday for her at this point, and then they made a holiday based on her actions later on in the chapter.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this is the holiday for the Persians. The later one is the holiday that's for the Jewish people for all time afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got underlined in my Bible here, grace and favor in verse 17.
Okay.
And then also previously earlier in the chapter in verse 9 and verse 15, we see favor come through a couple of times. So back in verse 9, now the young woman pleased him. So him being Haggai, the guy in charge of the girls in the harem, and she obtained his favor, so he readily gave her beauty preparations for her. And then down in verse 15, when the turn came for Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his daughter to go into the king, she requested nothing but what Haggai, the king's eunuch, the custodian of the women, advised, and Esther obtained favor in the sight of all who saw her.
Mm.
So she has gone into the harem. Haggai is the guy in charge, and for whatever reason, she obtains his favor, and he gives her everything that she needs. And not only that, but as time goes on, she's getting favor from everyone around her. Now, in verse 17,
she's a popular girl.
She obtained grace and favor in his sight, so in the king's sight. Now, there's something special about favor, and I even want to jump across to Luke chapter 2. We're talking about Jesus here as he's growing up as a young person. So in Luke chapter 2, verse 40, it says, and the child, Jesus, grew and became strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. And then verse 52, and Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you see, this is a spiritual gift. That's how I see it anyway. What do you think, Scappy?
Yeah, look, I actually, I love that. I also made a big point from my passage in that one.
Yeah.
I think it's a gift. Well, there's two gifts here. There is a gift of you being able to obtain favor with people, people just liking you. Mm-hmm. That's a great thing. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing. The excess side of this thing is you become a people pleaser.
Of course.
And become addicted to that. But at the same time, the other extreme of that is that you're just a person that people don't like to be around. It's not, you know, we also don't want that, mm-hmm. To be that person. But it is also a gift from God. Like whenever we receive kindness from someone else, mm-hmm. we have to acknowledge that this is a gift from God. I even mentioned yesterday about a guy who he's on Instagram, and I think you're going to really like it, and you too, listening friend. He's doing a project. He's an atheist.
Okay.
And he's doing a project. He's like, I'm going to believe, I'll live my life for 30 days as if God fully existed. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just like exercise the faith that I don't have, but I'll just do whatever God says I'll have to do. I'll just do it for 30 days. And like in day 5 or 6, like he came up in the camera and he was just crying. He was in tears. Mm-hmm. He was deeply touched because he said that he was thinking of this lady who is the mother of one of his friends. And he says, like, she's just a very kind lady to him, just super kind. And he says, like, before, you know, just in my atheist days, I just, she's a just great human being, just move on. But then he said, for the first time, I had the thought that the kindness that she shows towards me is actually a gift from heaven. Mm. And he was just, like, in tears saying, like, how profound it is that God is loving me through this lady, through her kindness.
That's so cool.
And I think that sometimes we take kindness for granted. The other really amazing thing as well, yesterday my mind was blown away with our interview with Maria Andreoli. Okay. She's talking about the different narratives that we tell ourselves and how that shapes our mental health. She's talking about, you know, the contamination narrative, which is the story that we tell that we you know, oh, my life was great and something happened and nothing was ever the same again. And we just like that just brings us to this very depressed state. Whereas she showed different narratives. One of the narratives is the communion narrative, where you know how sometimes you are wronged by someone? We all have been wronged by someone at some point in our lives. That's part of the human experience. But she says the narrative of communion is instead of focusing on who actually harmed you, you actually focus your narrative and you tell who actually was there to help you and to support you and to show you kindness. And sometimes it's God. All the time it's God, but other people as well. And when you're telling our story, we can tell, but let me know who stood by my side. This person, this is what they've done. And when we shift our minds to focus on how we have been blessed and helped by others, that also helps us to reinterpret, reframe our trauma in a light that is actually be conducive to our healing.
Yeah. No, that's so good. Awesome. Yeah.
No, I love it. It's a great, great thing. And look, again, when we're looking at Esther, we have to think about Esther's not a superhero.
No.
Mordecai, not a superhero. The book of Esther is designed with all the language, with all the ambiguity to say, hey, they're just absolutely everyday people.
Yeah.
Absolutely everyday people.
Yeah.
But look how God is. And that whenever we see God doing something in the background, one of the big themes of Esther, this is probably one of my favorite thing of the book of Esther, which used to be my least favorite thing. I used to not like the book of Esther too much.
Why? What?
But now I love it for the same reason, for the exact same reason that I didn't used to like it, because I just seeing it in a different perspective.
Okay.
It's the topic of the hiddenness of God.
Oh.
Because throughout the Bible, God is very, you know, it's showing up very upfront everywhere. In the book of Esther, God's name is not even mentioned. But because we as the readers, I believe that God wants us to see, hey, God is there. Actually, God is more so in the book of Esther than perhaps in any other book of the Bible. But he's hidden through the seemingly random events. But when you look at them at the big picture, like they're all interconnected. Mm-hmm. They're all there for a purpose. They're all there for a reason. And when we look at the book of Esther, we should read our own stories there. The stories of when we received favor in our lives as being a present of God. When there has been opposition to what we were trying to do. That was also part of the greater narrative of the great conflict between good and evil in our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
So let's read just the chapter, verse 19, before we move on to our song.
Okay. When virgins were gathered together a second time, Mordecai sat within the king's gate. Now, Esther had not revealed her family and her people, just as Mordecai had charged her, for Esther obeyed the command of Mordecai as when she was brought up by him.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
All right, Bruce Rochelle, what is the answer to our previous quiz question? How many chapters do we have in the book of Psalms?
We have 150 of them.
Yeah.
And yeah. So well done for those who played along. Our next quiz question, second of the morning, and Lindsay's yawning, so take advantage real quick.
Okay.
All right. What prowling animal did Peter compare the devil to?
All right. Boom.
We have correct answers in studio. 0491-064-669. What prowling animal did Peter compare the devil to? Please play along with us. We love our quiz time. You can tell.
It's an animal that also yawns a lot.
It's a praying mantis.
You know what? Since we're talking about animals, let me just say another thing about the book of Psalms, because I love it so much. It's we said that there's like 150, right?
Yeah.
I see each psalm like a bird as well.
A bird?
Yeah. Because you know how sometimes, you know, if you don't have trained eyes, you see some brown birds and you think, hey, it's a brown bird.
Yeah. Okay.
But if you are a bird watcher, no. This is not a brown bird. This is a, you know, I don't know, a bush thornbill, whatever. And
it's a tawny frog mouth.
Because, like, birds, even though some birds are similar, they're not identical. And sometimes it's just like some little details in the feathers that will set them apart. And why I say that to psalms, because psalms as well, there's some psalms that they look a lot like each other.
Yeah,
and if you're just
true.
Reading superficially, you think, I mean, I think I've read this psalm before somewhere or something like that. But when you compare them, sometimes they just have like one word different. And that word actually makes the whole difference.
Mm. Okay, so two questions. What's your favorite bird?
Look, I don't have a favorite bird. Just like asking me what my favorite children, you know, my favorite
that.
Child. Yeah,
it can't possibly be that bad.
I like birds. Look, I don't have a. I really don't have a favorite. But
I like resemblance. So
no, I'll tell you one. I'll tell you one that is one of my favorites.
What
though.
Did you? Which bird did you give to your favorite psalm?
No, look, I don't compare my psalms to it. I don't give birds to the actual psalms. That would be nice. But I'll tell you one. I really love the kestrel.
The kestrel.
Kestrel is a little, like, bird of prey. Mm-hmm. And he's tiny. He's cute. He is a little hawk. But he does one thing that is quite amazing.
Is he always a he?
Or she. They do something quite amazing, which is, and I have one not far from my home. And they can actually hover in the air without flapping their wings.
Like
they look like they're like floating supernaturally there. And this is one of the only
like
species of birds can do that, like a helicopter. It's amazing how they do
is
that.
Is it because it's so little?
It's little. It does a thing. I do not know exactly the physics behind it, but like when you see one, it's just like, what? Like it looks like he's just frozen in time.
Mm.
And he's looking down, looking at the bushland, seeing if he can find a little mice or a little lizard to eat. And then he swoops down and dinner's ready.
There you go.
Yeah. There's one in a hill not far from my home. And every time that I stop there, it fills my heart with joy.
So which kind of psalm is a levitating bird of prey?
We'll let you think about
it. I'll think about
back to
that
us
one,
on
okay?
that one.
All right.
Let's keep reading in Esther, shall we?
Let's keep reading it. So look, there's a few interesting words here in that passage that we read. It says here that the king loved Esther more than all the women. She found favor and kindness. You know what word that is, kindness?
Grace, chesed.
Chesed, which we spoke about it at length here. I think that we spoke about chesed for weeks in this show. So if you like a reminder of what chesed is, my favorite word in the whole Bible is chesed.
Okay.
Because chesed, and it is probably one of the most difficult words to translate in the Bible. Because it's a concept.
It's a concept that we don't really have the Western world so much.
No.
Yeah.
It says here it's kindness. It's the kindness.
It's a kindness that it's life-saving and you need someone else to give it to you for your life to be saved.
Well, that's a nice way to put it.
Yeah, because like if you think of the story of like Ruth and Boaz, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of hesed in that story, and it was hesed in that without Boaz taking Ruth as his wife, then Ruth and Naomi would be without a male protector, So that was life-saving for them in that society, as well as the fact that Ruth gave Hesed to Boaz in choosing him, even though he was a much older man and she could have chosen any of the young men, which he says. So she gave Hesed to him and saved his lineage. Wow,
yeah. Oh, beautiful. That's
and
really
Jesus
beautiful.
Comes
I
from
never knew
lineage.
That. I never knew that Chesed was so prevalent in the book of Ruth.
Absolutely.
The thing about Chesed, why it's so difficult, because Chesed, and I'll tell you what's my two cents of Chesed. I even wrote a little definition myself some time ago, is that Chesed is, you need to have a covenant to have Chesed.
Yep.
And covenant is something that we don't have this day and age. We do have, but we don't talk about them.
Yep.
The only kind of covenant that we kind of still have today in the modern age is our relationship with God. Know how we said, like, oh, you need to have a relationship with God. That the kind of relationship, it has a name, it's a covenant. Marriage, from a biblical perspective, is also a covenant. And a covenant, some people talk about contracts.
Yeah.
A covenant is like a contract. I do not know if you've heard theologians say that.
A business contract is like a very, very basic form of a covenant.
Except that there's a big difference.
At a very secular level.
Except that there's a big difference. In a normal contract, and yes, it's the closest thing we have, but with a huge difference.
Okay.
The huge difference is this. In a contract, if you don't do your part of the deal, mm-hmm. I don't give my part of the deal.
Okay.
In a contract, there's conditions. Yeah. Like, if you give me the money, I'll give you the goods. So if you don't give me the money, I'm not going to give you the goods. In a covenant, if you don't do your part of the covenant, I'm still liable to do my part of the covenant.
Interesting.
So in a marriage relationship, for example, both parties promises to love one another and to be patient with one another and so on. It means that if one party loses their patience to another party, if you are a covenant-keeping person, you're not going to use that as an excuse to lose your patience against them.
Yeah.
That's the and God is a covenantal, faithful God. So God always does what is right and just, irrespective of our faithfulness.
Yeah, so it's not
always
transactional
faithful.
Like a modern-day contract. It is beyond that.
It is way beyond that. And, of course, a covenant is a relationship that lasts for life.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that can break a covenant is death.
Yes.
So this is why covenant is just like a contract plus, plus, plus. And I find it fascinating, if not even downright surprising, that we see the word chesed applied from Xerxes, which is a very erratic man, a people-pleasing man, a man that we can see here that is even has dubious character. But the Bible says that Esther found chesed from him towards her, covenantal faithfulness. He swore on it, said, you know what, for this lady, I'm going to treat her well, I'm going to treat her kindly and fairly, irrespective of what she does or she doesn't do. And we will see that this chesed actually, we will see it's in action.
Mm.
We will see it in action. But I find that word being here, I'll say, I mean, how can a pagan Gentile king that is, you know, like a pushover, a total pushover, How is he able to show chesed? But he will end up showing chesed.
Interesting. Okay.
So I think it's quite fascinating. I think this was like, what? Xerxes, chesed. Okay, tell me more because I have to know.
So back to the covenant thing just for a moment, mm-hmm. just so we can get a really good view of it. So we're talking about covenant being a thing that's beyond a contract where both parties have to hold up to their end of the bargain no matter what the other person does,
yeah.
Essentially.
It's a promise of eternal faithfulness.
Yeah, and the way that the people in the ancient Near East used to declare a covenant was that they would indicate that, hey, I'm going to keep my end of the bargain, and if I don't, I'm calling upon the gods or the one true God to witness this covenant, and they can strike me dead if I don't hold my end of the bargain. That's usually what was said, something like that.
Yeah.
And they would either sacrifice an animal or have a knife or some type of symbol of death, and they would point it toward themselves if it was a knife to indicate that we're calling upon the gods to witness this and to kill me if I don't hold up my end of the bargain. ultimately, the covenant between God and humanity is Jesus dying on the cross for us, and he upholds his end of the bargain through death. So it's a pointing towards Jesus,
yeah.
Every covenant that there is.
Absolutely. And the amazing thing about the covenant in Jesus is that Jesus fulfilled the covenant by being faithful as God.
Yes.
He showed up, but also as a human being.
Yes.
And he even fulfilled the part of the bargain, saying, hey, the law says that the one who transgressed against God needs to die and be punished by God and receive the wrath. You know, okay, I'm doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For your behalf. So, that, you know, I am fulfilling the covenant. And this is why we can know for sure, if God would have just waved his hand, saying, yeah, I forgive you. It's okay. My son doesn't need to die. We could not say God is not a covenantal faithful God.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't fulfill his promises, and he's not faithful to the covenant. The only reason that we know we can trust in God is God says, look, I have a covenant and I'm going to fulfill it, both from my end, but also for your end as humanity. And this
covering
is actually
bases.
Unheard of. There's no religion. There's no story. There's no alien. No, nothing. No one ever in the entirety of the human history that have shown that kind of faithfulness. It just doesn't, it's not there. No other religion, no other place. You can only find that level of faithfulness in Jesus. That's why we can safely commit our lives to him.
Mm. Yeah.
He proved it. He's shown it.
Definitely.
So let's move on. Esther had not yet made known her kindred, her people, even as Mordecai has commanded her, for Esther did what Mordecai told her as she had done under his care. Look, they were afraid of anti-Semitism, and I think there's some good reasons for that as well.
But it's also clear that she's obedient and has been an obedient child, and now she's an obedient like teenage girl. So she's still obeying the one authority that she has in her life.
Yeah.
You know what? As I was reading
that's
this
a great point.
Recently, we were talking about the hiddenness of God and the hiddenness theme that's in this book, and the fact that she's hidden in plain sight as well. So something that jumped out at me as I was reading this last night was that the fact that her parents died was possibly part of God's plan for her to be in the palace. Because if she had parents and if she had other siblings and was a part of the community much larger, people probably would have taken notice of the fact that she ended up in the palace and would have talked in community and said, oh, do you know Queen Esther? Yeah, she's like one of us Jews. Whereas because it was just her and her uncle Mordecai, and they were very close mouth on the topic, and he worked in the palace and he was already a very discreet man and he was encouraging discretion for her. This really worked in the favor of all of the Jewish people because they were sleeper agents. Nobody knew that they were Jewish people.
Very interesting.
And there was nobody else who knew them well enough to talk about them.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Never thought about that.
Mm.
Yeah. Love it.
She would have been kept very close.
Yeah.
Like he probably was very protective of her and didn't allow her out into public a great deal. And so even the people who knew him as Jewish probably didn't know the connection between them.
Very interesting. Yeah, I never thought about that. Yeah, that's great. Thanks for sharing. Well, let's read in verse 21 here and see what happens. Verse 21 to verse 23, there's a little story there.
In those days, while Mordecai sat within the king's gate, two of the king's eunuchs, Bigthan and Teresh, doorkeepers, became furious and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. So the matter became known to Mordecai, who told Queen Esther, and Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name. And when an inquiry was made into the matter, it was confirmed, and both were hanged on a gallows. And it was written in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king.
Yeah, it is a very interesting story here. The king's life gets saved, and Queen Esther, she, you know, inform the king without being called.
Mm-hmm.
You see that there's an interesting thing here in the book of Esther.
She made a report whether she probably didn't have to like turn up or say it herself necessarily.
But look, Vashti, when the king summoned Vashti, Vashti didn't come.
Mm-hmm.
Now with Esther, when the king didn't summon her, then she came.
Mm.
But she came this time and said, hey, king, look, I'm here. I know that I haven't been summoned, but hey, it's important. Like your life is on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing about Esther as well is that she gave the credit to Mordecai.
Mm.
She informed the king in Mordecai. She could have totally taken the credit. Hey, king, I foiled the plot for you. I know what's happening here. I have sources. No. Look, king, it's Mordecai, the Jew who's sitting at your gate. This is what he found out. And the king investigated. And he, you know, that was the whole ordeal was written in the chronicles of, in the king's presence. And what we would expect is that Mordecai would be thanked,
awarded,
exalted, glorified, whatever it is. But we'll see. That doesn't happen. Mm.
Time passed. Nothing happened.
That doesn't happen. And that has some really profound implications because we often think, hey, but sometimes people say, hey, wait, I've done so many things. I haven't been recognized. And sometimes, you know, you don't get recognized. You don't get recognized by your workplace adequately. You don't get recognized by the community adequately sometimes. You don't get recognized by your family sometimes. And that can bother us. But we can see that even God is behind all these things.
Yeah, as and you well. Know, he continued to work faithfully despite the fact that nobody recognized what he had, uncovered.
Yeah.
And hey, we now have a quiz answer. Please produce a show.
We do indeed. So our quiz question number two was, what prowling animal did Peter compare the devil to? That was a roaring lion.
Wow. Not a praying mantis.
Not a praying mantis. No, that was not a correct answer.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Roaring lion.
So yeah, we got lots of people who sent in lion for that one. And yeah, we got somebody who's like, I think I might have missed you reading out the question. Sorry, you must have been lying down on the job.
I was lying down on the job for a minute.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, dear. Very good. Look, I thought about a psalm that I would attribute
to
Kestrel. How about Psalm 91? One of my favorites. It's a psalm of extreme courage. If you're like afraid, if you read Psalm 91, it's just like, you know, spiritual thing that is just like, you know, gets the fear out and just like makes you feel invincible, really.
Mm. I think probably Psalm 23 and 91 are the two most loved.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Psalm 91 is like extreme protection from God. It's a powerful psalm.
Mm.
Thank you very much, producer Shell. We're talking about lions. We're talking about psalms here. And we're going to be talking about a whole lot of things more, including the recovery of artifacts from the museum heist in France. There's some news there. I'm going to be talking about how to transform a God moment into a lifetime mission. How to eat chocolate and feel good about it. That's going to be our interview with Dr. John Ashton. You cannot miss that one. And our encounter with God. We're going to be continuing our journey through 1 Corinthians chapter 14 and the topic of speaking in tongues. What does the Bible say?
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.